You're listening to RTI Audio, powered by Rocky Top Insider. This is the RTI Press Pass with Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
And welcome to the Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here it is Wednesday, June 8th. My name is Rick Butler. Join with me as always, Ryan Shumpert. Good afternoon, my friend. A little bit of an overcast day. Doesn't look like that's going to carry through to the weekend. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. The rain, it was supposed to rain this morning. It held off for me to get some golf in early this morning up in Adam.
You did a million things this morning before I think most people even woke up.
Well, I don't know about most people woke up. Maybe
it's summer. I think some people.
Well, maybe the college, the students of the world. But yeah, took a friend to the airport this morning. Picked him up around six,
and then
like I said, went to play golf. I knew I was gonna or said I'd pick him up. I don't remember. He asked me about it sometime this weekend, so I said, yeah, let's get an early morning golf round in. Was the first person out on the course and was able to play in a little under 2.5 hours. So it was a good start to the day. Full 18.
There you go. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Do you feel fairly recovered this weekend? There were plenty of late nights at the ballpark. I think we're the last people in the ballpark. Am I right on that?
No, I think Wes Rucker's always.
Oh, you're
he's
right.
Always
okay.
The last.
All right,
last person.
Wes
out.
Was there, but we were.
Yeah, I think
the
behind,
second and third to last people.
Yeah, I think so. Which was thanks to you for hanging around with me on a couple of those nights to let me finish writing everything at the press box and not having to go back and do it. But yeah, no, it was some late nights, but that's the nature of it. Happy that Saturday game this weekend against Notre Dame is a day game, so it we haven't seen what the. If there's a game three, what the first pitch time would be, but with it being Sunday, I think there'd be a good chance it'd be a day game. So hopefully only one real late night this week.
Yeah, half the games on the super regional schedule will be on the Friday, Saturday, then potentially Sunday route, whereas the other half, the right side of the bracket, they will be on the Saturday, Sunday, potentially Monday side of things. So really kind of a four-day stretch coming up of college baseball that should be a lot of fun to watch. Before we get into anything Tennessee-related, because, boy, we got a lot to get into there, are there any other games that have caught your eye? Any other matchups from this last weekend or any other coming up this weekend that you're kind of looking forward to?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously the first couple days, I guess Friday, Saturday, Sunday, watching a little bit of the action when I could, but obviously very busy covering Tennessee, spending, you know, 7-8 hours a day at the ballpark.
Long days.
But on Monday, when Tennessee was done and there was, I don't even know what it was, eight or so championship games, I was basically watching games all day, and there were a ton of really good ones. I got to shout out ESPN. I have it on ESPN Plus. I think they were kind of running it between games on their networks, the squeeze play, which is like their version of the.
Did Tony mention that during one of his interviews or post-game pressers?
I do think he might have mentioned something.
I remember him saying that, and I had no idea what that was.
Yes.
He said the red zone of college baseball, and
yes,
I was like,
that's right.
I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, so basically they were showing two or three games at a time, and then big moments they were kind of flipping over to one game, and they had Chris Burke on there, obviously a Tennessee guy, and then Mike Rooney, and I can't remember who the host was. But that was a phenomenal way to watch baseball, and obviously that's the thing about baseball. There are a lot of really competitive moments, but they're very spaced out.
Yes,
so that gets you
not bang, bang.
Exactly. That gets you a lot of the action, but Oregon State Vandy was very good game. Southern, really all the SEC games I thought were really good. Southern Miss, LSU, very exciting. Oklahoma with a comeback win over Florida. Oklahoma State, Arkansas was really, really good. And then the nightcap, Stanford, Texas State, was a fantastic game too with Stanford. Withholding the underdog Bobcats, who
I know
were
rooting for the Cats there.
Yeah, and they
definitely was.
They were one of the best, mid-major programs all year. And I think from how Georgia Southern fared, I think it's if someone was going to get a region host, one of those small schools, I think it probably should have been Texas State. I mean, they won that Conference USA that Georgia Southern's in. I want to say the conference they're in. Texas State won that conference by like three games, and it was kind of surprising to see Georgia Southern win that. But no. A lot of really good games, and I guess the one series besides the Tennessee one that I'm really looking forward to this weekend is the fact that you have Ole Miss, going on the road to face Southern Miss in a super regional. That
yeah.
Southern Miss had a super, super cool environment last weekend for their regional, and then LSU obviously had a lot of fans there to kind of make it very much a neutral site, and I imagine that will be the same thing this weekend with Ole Miss. And you got to give them credit, got to give Bianco, Ole Miss's coach, credit. Looked like he might have been headed for his last year just about 2 months ago, and you know, they kind of collapsed after Tennessee swept them and yeah. were really bad the first half of SEC play, but, man, they turned it around. And
they're as hot as anybody.
Yeah, I mean, their lineup is phenomenal, and for them to go down to Coral Gables and win the Miami Regional and to sweep the Miami Regional, and really all three of those games weren't even that competitive. It was really impressive, and it should make for an interesting weekend of baseball in, I believe, Hattiesburg. I believe that's where Southern Miss is. Not 100%
sure. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, there should be a lot of fun matchups coming up this week. And just kind of round things out, your pairings for the Super Regional round, Tennessee and Notre Dame, East Carolina and Texas, Texas A&M and Louisville, Virginia Tech and Oklahoma, Oregon State and Auburn, Southern Miss and Ole Miss, like you just said, North Carolina and Arkansas, Stanford and UConn, and that rounds it out. So pretty good competition coming up this weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and after, and I, you know, I don't want to make this sound like I'm bashing anybody else, because I've been leading this charge all year of this being a really down SEC, at least at the top, and Tennessee really benefiting from that. But I thought a really good first weekend of tournament for the SEC. What, five teams into the Super Regionals? And like we kind of just hit on, LSU was tied going into the ninth inning. Vanderbilt lost by one. Florida was up by two on Oklahoma in the eighth inning of that game. So, and again, some teams won close games to get there as well. Obviously, Arkansas is probably the biggest example of that. But the SEC fended very well for itself that first weekend, and it should be interesting to see how they do this weekend. And then Texas A&M is the one team that, if they were to get through a Super Regional, they would be on Tennessee's side of the bracket in Omaha. It wouldn't line itself up for a first-round game. Tennessee matches up with that Texas-East Carolina Super Regional. But a potential for Tennessee to play the Aggies, who they haven't played all season, not in the regular season, not in the SEC tournament.
Yeah,
that's in Omaha.
Two really interesting potential matchups right there. Obviously, you're talking about Texas A&M, who has kind of eluded Tennessee for this whole season, but you have seen them be near the top, like just so far through the standings. And then if Texas comes out of that,
yeah,
wow. I mean, talk about the drama there. That's obviously who Tennessee played last year in the College World Series. So,
and just, one of their seven losses this year, however many
that's
losses
right.
they're at.
I didn't even think about that. Going back to the beginning of the year, was that the in Houston?
Yeah.
That's right.
Very first loss. I think that was the second weekend of the season in Houston. So I guess Tennessee was 4-1 after that game. And then that was when they went on their, what I think ended up being, a 31-32 game win streak.
Yep. Now, obviously, East Carolina or Louisville, right, could spoil either of those and present a completely new matchup for Tennessee. But no doubt about it, some interesting opponents on Tennessee's side of the bracket there. Okay, before we get into, we already recorded a instant reaction podcast right after the final game of the Knoxville Regional. That was on late Sunday night, so we already got a lot of those thoughts out, but we will touch back on that. But real quick before we get there, you talked to Jared Dickey yesterday, is that correct?
Yeah, I did.
Talk him a little bit about just kind of what you guys talked about, where he is heading into this Super Regional. Don't give it all away. I know you are you're writing about it right now as well, so you can check out most of the interview there. But just kind of give a tease. What was that conversation like?
Yeah, so the story's kind of, I guess, origin was about the fact that he lost 75 pounds last year from when he got to Tennessee to this season. And that's kind of how it started, and then it kind of got into he gained all that weight after committing to Tennessee and dealt with depression when he was in high school, and that kind of led to his weight gain. And he talked a lot about getting help at Tennessee and how Tennessee's coaches really encouraged him to do that. And then into a lot of stuff with the season in which he's been really good. He's kind of had some frustrating injuries with that bone bruise on his right foot that got back in Oxford the second weekend of SEC play and truly hasn't been able to completely shake. And one thing that I guess the quote that was cool from that, and I don't know if it'll make the story or not, but he talked about he wasn't in Omaha last year. He didn't go to Hoover. He was playing summer ball when that happened. And he talked about, I think he said, it made my blood boil, you know, not being able to be there, and just how much kind of motivation he's drawn from that to get back and make experiences like that for himself.
You know, and I'm sure that, you know, we'll have these quotes in the story as well. But I also find it really interesting going back to one of Tony Vitello's press conferences from the weekend. I can't really remember which one it was. But he talked about a little bit about that story of Jared Dickey and saying that, hey, this guy is almost is pretty much the kind of guy that almost makes you feel bad about yourself, maybe even feels a little bit guilty because of just how much of a hard worker he is, because of how much of just a good, well-rounded person he is. I thought that was really fascinating. And then you're right, him kind of talking about really teasing the story of once he got here, once he realized that, you know, there were steps to be taken in order for him to get to where he needs to be, also in order to elevate the team to where it needs to get to be, then this guy has been nonstop, maybe the hardest worker in the Tennessee program.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't lose that much weight without being incredibly... That's
an insane number. I mean, you obviously can't see it, but my jaw dropped when you said that.
And no, it really is crazy, and I think that one thing kind of back up Tony's point of, what a hard worker and what a good mindset and good teammate he is he had, you know, doing some other interviews for a story, people talked about just how good his mindset was and his attitude every single day when he came in and wasn't playing last year. And so I asked him about that. I said, why do you have such, you know, good attitude when you're losing weight? You're not out there playing baseball every day. And obviously he's at practice. He's playing baseball too. But the bulk of that year was kind of like the Grant Williams, the Admiral Schofield, the fat camp. He's trying to get into shape. And he talked about, he started a thought with, well, if I'm going to, you know, I got to show up every day and being able to do this. There's a lot of people that maybe won't be like that won't have a good mindset. And I thought he was going to go with, you know, I got to be able to create separation for myself. I got to be able to separate myself to play. And he went in the complete opposite direction. He goes, I need to be able to push those teammates, and I need to be able to get them better. So, like you said, and like Tony Vitello said, a very, very good teammate and certainly a guy that has his priorities in check and is very much the team to team to team.
Yeah, that is a great story. I know people are going to be looking forward to hearing that interview. I am certainly going to be looking forward to hearing that as well whenever it does come out. And kind of in that same light, it's just really fascinating, I think, to get these looks into really where a player has been and what has led them up to this point. I mean, when you get to this point in the season, the fan base, the media, everybody knows about these players, and you have a little bit of a connection to these players, regardless of if you've met them or not. But then to get that background story, to know where they were and what led them up to where they are now, I think that's so fascinating. You go back to your story about Will Mabry from a couple months ago, and we just had that on Twitter and Facebook if you have not seen that. But that was a really fascinating story about kind of his journey to where he is now. And talk about, you know, Will Mabry having an incredible weekend on, was that, Sunday?
Sunday.
And really was such a big reason why Tennessee was able to sweep, to get that win and sweep that series. And then you go to, you know, what you're talking about, Jared Dickey. Then you think about from last weekend, the Evan Russell story.
Yeah.
Right, and you think about how, you know, we don't know a lot of maybe what happened, but we did get the news from his family, and I believe his dad and his sister, that, hey, things are good. And you saw him obviously back on the field and in the game, but that he was dealing with a little bit of anxiety. And so it's fascinating to see all these things. And I certainly, from the media perspective, am appreciative of the way that they will open up. And I think it's cool for, you know, the fan aspect as well to kind of see that side and be able to connect that side. So they're not just people who you're rooting for on a field to score, but they're, you know, people, right, that you want to see succeed regardless of what it is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, not everybody's story is different, but a lot of guys with good stories like that, Mike Wilson and Newsom, a lot of great article on Jarrell Ortega.
That's
where
right.
He was last year, you know, he was basically going into the fall of the 2021 season, so the fall of 2020, like he was one of the best players on the team, and then he just basically didn't play. He lost his spot, and Max really at shortstop, Liam Spence jumped him, and then obviously he's at second baseman now. Max Ferguson was already ahead of him there, and he was on road trips that he wasn't on. He was sleeping in the facility so he could wake up early and being able to get work in. So that's kind of the cool thing about this team is that as good as they are, there's a lot of players that are in completely new roles this year that and granted, they brought in a ton of good guys too, Chase Dullinger, Chase Burns, who are stars, and they've been stars from day one that they've been on Tennessee's campus, but a lot of other guys too that have paid their dues and have done a lot of improving and a lot of hard work to get where they are.
You have a lot of guys who have been on this team for a while and very much came out this season wanting to prove that last year's team was not a one-hit wonder, right?
Oh,
that they
100%.
Were going to step up into that position, whether it was Trey Lipscomb at third base, whether it's like you're talking about, right? Jarrell Ortega at second base. These are guys who said, hey, we know that this team is going to be better. We have seen it for years. This team is not a one-hit wonder in 2021. In fact, it's going to be better, you know, the next season. Who knows what happens after that?
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. There's a ton of guys, even pitching staff. If you look at Will Mabry, probably is maybe the biggest jump, but even Kirby Cannell is where he's at right now is light years to what his role was at the end of last season and light years to what his role was really at the beginning of the season too.
When you talk about those two guys right there, Kirby Cannell and Will Mabry, to me, that might be one of the biggest takeaways from the regional weekend. Really, when you had a lot of talk was about Tennessee's starting rotation, and rightfully so. They've been great, and especially the way that Dolander and Sewell were able to close out the SEC tournament or so. But man, when Tennessee needed it most, it was not the starting pitching this weekend that was really relied upon. It was that relief pitching. Kirby Cannell came in, saved the day for Tennessee on Saturday, and then Will Mabry did the same thing on Sunday. What does that tell you? Kind of how much confidence I think does that inspire heading into next week? And not necessarily that was not a strength of Tennessee, but now you kind of know, hey, bad outings can happen at any time, right? Maybe that's what happened to the Dolander or so. But man, now you have that relief pitching that is going to be behind. They showed you a really good weekend in the regional. What do you see from it?
Yeah, no, it's what I've said on here many times. That's why losing in a regional just didn't seem plausible for Tennessee, just because they had so much pitching depth. And you look, they were trying to manage it. They didn't use Camden Sewell, and I think there's a case to be made Camden Sewell's Tennessee's second best pitcher right now, and they were saving him for Monday if they needed that game. So there's just so many weapons down there, so many different guys they can go to, and that showed up. It showed up at the plate too, where we talked about this on the Instant Reaction. Christian Moore, Jared Dickey had a bunch of good at bats coming off the bench out of the dugout in the ninth inning of both Saturday and Sunday's wins. So very good depth. I think it gets a little bit easier to plan the pitching this weekend. So they maybe won't be relied on to give them as many innings as they did, because again, there was a fourth game out there that they never had to play, but they were planning for it just in case they did. So it'll be interesting to see, but no doubt pitching depth's a huge strength.
So coming up this weekend, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Friday, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, TBD after that. Tennessee is going to take on Notre Dame, host them in the Knoxville Super Regional. That is coming up this weekend. You know, plenty of things to get into, but I want to stick with the pitching side of things, Ryan. We're right there already. Do you think it's going to be Dolander and then Tidwell as your Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, that's what I would do, and more importantly, that's what I think Tennessee will do.
Okay, so you just mentioned that you think that Camden Sewell might even be the second best pitcher for Tennessee right now. Do you see him getting that third slot, or could it be a number of different guys? You obviously have Drew Beam right there. You know, in the hypothetical that we're tossing out, you'd even have a Chase Burns right there, but do you think Sewell could be the guy for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think any of those three guys could be the guy. I don't have a great feel for what Tennessee's going to do there. I doubt, we won't talk to Tony Vitello until Thursday, and we're recording this on Wednesday. So we haven't heard from him, and I doubt he discloses that anyway. I bet he discloses what he does the first 2 days, or at least the first day of the series, what the pitching plan is going to be. If it was me, I think I would go with Chase Burns. I don't think you can really trust Drew Beam to, at least in that level of a start, your season on the line start, to give him the ball. And he's just, it feels like he's hit a wall really about a month, 6 weeks ago. And he hasn't always been bad in that time frame. I didn't think he was bad against Georgia Tech. He had some bad defense really hurt him out. Cortland Lawson error cost him Tennessee two runs that would have ended what I believe was the third inning. So, but I think I would use Chase Burns just because he started in that role all year. He hasn't been as good as he was early in the year, but he hasn't hit that wall like Beam has. He's had some really good outings, and I think Camden's better than him, and I think Camden just has so much, or maybe not is better than him, but has been better than him, is better than him right now, more effective than him right now. And I like the ability to have Camden's flexibility in the bullpen, to be able to use him in multiple games. I just think when you combine Camden Sewell with Redmond Walsh, you feel really good about the eighth and ninth inning anytime you have the lead. So I would keep him in that role. I would have him ready to go in a longer, former fashion, which has really kind of been what he's done for most of the season. If Tidwell has a bad start, if Dolander has a bad start, go straight to Camden Sewell and ask for him to get you 3 or 4 innings. So it's not that I would throw him less innings than he would necessarily if he starts, unless it's, a really long start, 7, 8 innings, which I don't think he would have. He pitched really well in the SEC Championship, and he didn't go that long just because that's what his pitch count is up to from being in the bullpen all year. But I'm fascinated to see what they do. I think there's a handful of good options. I just don't think I would start Drew Beam in that Sunday role again.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and a handful of good options is a good way to put it, because the depth that they have built over the course of the regular season and into the postseason so far is pretty darn impressive. The weird thing is, because I agree that I think that Sewell and Burns are kind of your 1-2 punch, I think, on that last game, if you can get it to there. Excuse me, on the if it needs to go there. But the thing about it is, they don't seem to, now tell me if I'm wrong here, but they don't seem too confident with Drew Beam out of the bullpen. I think you saw a couple times where that maybe was not as solid as they would have liked. So, I mean, if Drew Beam doesn't start one of these games, presumably the Sunday game, do you think there's a chance that you just don't see him on the weekend?
Yeah, no, I think there's a great, maybe not a great chance, but definitely, that's definitely
it seems like that's the likely scenario.
Well, I'm not even sure I would say likely. I probably overspoke by saying great chance. I just think that's very much in play. And if he doesn't start, I think that's very, very plausible. Just because, like you said, they've only used him once out of the bullpen this year. He struggled in that outing against Georgia. It's not to say that he couldn't give them an inning, especially if the game is opened up a little bit, 3-4-5, more like that run game. Either direction you use him, but I don't think that they necessarily have the trust to go to him in a high leverage situation out of the bullpen. And in that case, again, we just talked about Tennessee's pitching depth. It's a 3-game series. You're only playing 3 games at most. You may only play 2 games. So there's just going to be guys that Tennessee has pitched a lot this year that probably, unless the starters, multiple of the starters pitch poorly and can't go deep into games, just everybody that they've used this year and relied on, they're not going to have the innings probably to use all those guys.
Sure. That is certainly a fascinating way to look at it. All right, so let's flip the side of the coin a little bit and talk about Notre Dame. They got to Knoxville by sweeping their 3-game series in the Statesboro Regional. They took care of Texas Tech on Friday with a 3-2 victory, followed that up with a 6-4 victory over Georgia Southern on Saturday, and then closed things down once again with a victory over Texas Tech 2-1. As you can see with those scores, not a lot of offense. We'll get back into that in a minute. But, Ryan, what do you kind of know about this this Notre Dame team for starters before we get into some of the statistics maybe from the season?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the pitching is really good, and the hitting is, I don't want to say bad, but average, mediocre. Yeah. If I were to compare them to an SEC team, it would be Vanderbilt. I think that's what they have. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of been a pretty inconsistent year for them. So they played 10 ACC series, and two of, I think, the first three, they didn't get to play all the games because of weather. So the first five ACC series that they played, they either swept the opponent or got swept. It's been very up or down, wishy-washy, however you want to say it, but a team that certainly has figured things out and has played well.
Say that one more time, the sweep?
The first five series ACC series they played all of. They only played, I think, 2 games against North Carolina State and 1 against Virginia Tech. It was a sweep. I think they swept 3 of them, and they got swept in the other 2. So they were not pushing many series, or I guess you can't push series in baseball. They weren't winning 2 out of 3 or winning 1 out of 3. It was kind of all or nothing in their first couple series, but really good.
Does that give you any vibes of Michigan basketball heading into the NCAA tournament? Weren't they like 20 straight games or something with win-loss, win-loss, win-loss? Now, I know this isn't necessarily alternating, but kind of plays into that. All or nothing.
I think this is well, I guess you could look at it different ways. But when you first said it, I'm like, no, this is completely different. This is the reverse of that, because they've been really good for 3 games at a time. But at the same time, that's just one weekend, so it's a series. You kind of bunch those together. So
I see what you're saying there. You got to be pretty good to win 3 in a row, but also when you lose a couple in a row. That's a fascinating development.
Yeah, so I don't even know. I honestly, now the more that I think about it, I think your logic is probably more sound on that point. But they've kind of moved past that, and that's funny. I'd forgotten about that Michigan thing where it was like 18 straight games they'd gone win-loss.
Is that what it was, 18?
Something to that extent around then. It was like over a month straight of games. But no, and I think one thing that stands out about Notre Dame is that it's a winning program, one of the better programs in the Midwest. Obviously, I was about to say one of the best programs in the Big Ten, because that's regionally what Notre Dame is, but they're one of the best programs in the ACC, which is a significantly better baseball conference than the Big Ten is. And I think what maybe stands out the most is that last season, after Selection Monday, the sentiment was, all right, Notre Dame was underseeded. They got a bad draw. They win the region on the road, and then they go play at Mississippi State in a hostile environment for a super regional that was really competitive. Obviously, Mississippi State, they weren't the best team all of last year, but they were in that national seed. They went on to win the national championship. Now this year, sentiment was, wow, people kind of thought they were going to be a host. They were not a host. They were the number one or the number one two seed in the whole tournament. So number 17 team going to the Statesboro region to face Georgia Southern and Texas Tech, as well as what I believe was UNC Greensboro, who came out of the SoCon. And they won that, and I don't want to say with ease because that's not really true. They swept through it, but like you just said, the score, all three of those games were very, very competitive. And then now what's their reward? Well, they got to go to the SEC and play in a hostile environment.
Yep.
A much smaller stadium this year at Lindsey Nelson compared to the dud at Mississippi State, which is the biggest in all of college baseball. But again, you're going on the road to play one of the best teams in the country and an SEC team. So I think that experience last year for Notre Dame should bode well from an expectation standpoint. And look, you've seen, not that that means Notre Dame's going to come in and win, but you've seen Tony Vitello talk about it a lot, where in 2019, they made it to the SEC tournament for the first time in forever. They made it to the NCAA tournament for the first time in forever, and how beneficial those experiences were for them coming into 2021. And when they got to the SEC tournament, they were much better prepared, didn't know what to expect. They were just playing baseball. They didn't need to make it more than it was. And then you kind of saw the same thing. Tennessee struggled in Omaha last year. They got there for the first time in the program in, I guess, what would have been 16 years. And I think that is something that we'd probably talk about if Tennessee can make it past Notre Dame, how beneficial that experience would be for this year's team. I think kind of in this sense that works on the flip, where Notre Dame should be prepared for a hostile road environment and coming into play a really, really talented SEC team.
That's a really fascinating way to look at it that I haven't necessarily looked at the entirety of Tony Vitello's span here at Tennessee. You have seen them establish new and different building blocks kind of in each year, and then you've seen them progressively improve on those from one year to the other. You think about, you know, just from last year to this year, or excuse me, from, you know, you go back a little bit and, you know, you make it to you're in the SEC tournament, then you get to the SEC tournament championship game, but you lose to Arkansas, you come back the next year, you win that championship. We'll see what happens if they can get through Notre Dame coming up in the Super Regional. But to back up pretty much what Ryan said with a little bit of statistics, we know that Tennessee is one of the best offensive teams in college baseball right now, and the statistics back that up. Tennessee is a top 10 team when it comes to on-base percentage, home runs, triples, doubles, hits. And they are sitting just outside of the top 10 when it comes to batting average, right there at number 11. Offensively, Notre Dame, Ryan, like you said, we're not going to go to the point to say anybody's bad, especially if you're at this point in the postseason. But like you said, a little average, I think, is a pretty good way to explain it. Pedestrian, even, another good way to explain it. For instance, Notre Dame sitting at 51 in batting average, and then triple digits when it comes to hits, doubles, triples, and just under that in home runs, triple digits when it comes to on-base percentage as well. So that is certainly a place where Tennessee has an advantage. But when you look at the pitching side of things, these are two very, very good pitching teams. Two teams that are in the top 10 in most categories when it comes to collective team pitching, walks and hits per innings pitched, ERA, strikeouts per nine innings, strikeout to walk ratio. Both of these teams are sitting in the top 10, sitting in the top 15 range. And I think that is where, to me, that's where I am very interested in this matchup. Certainly, to me, kind of what I'm looking for in this matchup. I want to see how Notre Dame plans to attack Tennessee's offense, because there's your strength on strength. Notre Dame's offense versus, Notre Dame's pitching versus Tennessee's offense. I think that's going to be fascinating to watch as well. A couple players that you can keep in mind. Brady Gumpf, Nick DeMarco, David LaManna, those are some of their best players when it comes to batting average. Brooks Coetzee, Jack Brannigan, Ryan Cole, some of their home run leaders. So certainly a balanced team, but definitely shifts in the favor of their pitching statistics, at least when it comes to the regular season and what has happened through the postseason so far.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you look at the bats, what stands out is that there's just not any goat, you know, huge home run number guys. They have three in double digits, but they're at 11, 11, and 10. And pretty decent, throughout their lineup, guys that are capable of hitting home runs. But not like last weekend when you saw Georgia Tech and Campbell come in here, both who I think had five, maybe even six guys with double-digit home runs. Georgia Tech, multiple guys that were north of 15 on the year. Just a lot of really, really high-level sluggers. You don't have that on this team. And I think what maybe in the pitching staff, the depth is really good, good bullpen, but to me what I think maybe is going to be interesting to watch is John Bertrand is their ace. He's started all 16 weekends for them this year. He's thrown 99 innings, very high usage guy, 9-2 record, 2.227 ERA. He's their best pitcher. Again, it's kind of like Tennessee where there's not a massive drop-off. I think that's actually kind of a good way to look at it. Chase Dolander is Tennessee's best pitcher.
Right.
There's still a bunch of really good guys after that, but Chase Dolander is a difference factor or difference maker, and we kind of talked about it a minute ago that we think that he'll be on Saturday in Game 2, at least if the past few weeks are any indication of what Tennessee's going to do. Where does Notre Dame use Bertrand? Does he go on Friday night? Did they try to kind of get a little bit of a pitching advantage? And again, that's not that Blake Tidwell's not capable of out-pitching him on any given night, but maybe to get a favorable pitching matchup, or did they say, hey, let's go straight up Dolander, best on best on the mound? And I think that'll be interesting to see how it all comes together and how everybody uses their starting pitching kind of from a matchup standpoint.
No doubt about it. And then as well, both teams pretty darn good on the field as well. Both teams rank in the top 15 when it comes to fielding percentage. Ryan, it was a dramatic, dramatic weekend at the ballpark last week, and we have another exciting one potentially coming up this weekend. You have any kind of final thoughts or wrap-up statements or just kind of ideas when it comes to either Notre Dame or Tennessee heading into the Supers?
Yeah, I mean, there's one more thing I would kind of use to illustrate Notre Dame's. I kind of compared their hitting there to their power hitting to Georgia Tech for a second, but to illustrate their pitching on the flip side, I believe it was last week Georgia Tech didn't have a single pitcher who'd thrown over 20 innings on the year that had an ERA under 5. So very high numbers there, and a lot of their starters were in the 5 or 6 range. On the flip side, Notre Dame has 8 guys that would match that criteria with over 20 innings pitched on the year and an ERA less than 5. So good depth.
Yep.
Tennessee's not going to be able to wear out their arms. And, you know, if we got to a deciding game 7 on Monday, if Georgia Tech would have held on to win that Sunday night game, I think Tennessee's depth at that point would have just worn on Georgia Tech, and Tennessee would have won big. Super regional round, it's not set up for that to happen, and especially with what Notre Dame happens on the mound, Tennessee's going to have to earn everything at the plate this weekend.
Yep, there will be no doubleheaders. Weather looks pretty darn good when it comes to everything this weekend. But that's going to be pretty much it. Obviously, there is still so much to be seen on the field. We will be right there with you when it comes to Friday, Saturday, and then potentially Sunday if needed as well. Ryan and I will be at the ballpark. We'll be covering the games and getting you all the news as quickly and as good as we possibly can. I'm excited. Friday night, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Saturday, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And then obviously Sunday, again, TBD. Ryan, any kind of predictions? Who do you think is going to come out?
Yeah, I think Tennessee comes out, and I'll say 3 games. I think Notre Dame gives them a good series. That could be proven. I'll say this, and I've said on here many times, I think Tennessee's very capable of losing the Super Regional. I think they're capable of losing Notre Dame. I think they're a good team. But if you asked me what's more likely, Notre Dame wins or Tennessee wins in 2, I'd still go with Tennessee wins in 2.
Which day? Do you have a thought on which Friday or Saturday would be maybe which one you're picking them to lose?
Probably I guess go Friday just because I don't want to bet against Chase Dolander, even though he struggled last week, which maybe makes it even more so that I think he's going to have a really nice bounce-back start. And Blake Tidwell has been pretty inconsistent, but not that I'm, you know, nailing it on the chalkboard that that's the game they're going to lose, or even that they're going to lose a game.
Sure, yeah, just for hypothetical.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree. I think Tennessee wins in 3. I think it's going to be a great series this weekend. And, you know, I was taking a look at the betting numbers earlier today. Tennessee, the overwhelming favorite. Now, you know, slow the horse a little bit to win the College World Series, but it is just fascinating, obviously, the overwhelming favoritism when it comes to Tennessee from the betting markets.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's not that surprising to me because no. I've had, you know, people who are more casual college baseball fans and then some people who are Tennessee fans who follow Tennessee really closely but don't follow the college baseball scene super closely as a whole. You know, who's Tennessee? Who are you scared about for Tennessee? Who's their biggest competition? And it's like, I don't really have anyone to give to them because it's just been so inconsistent kind of all year behind Tennessee. And again, baseball is not a game where if that was the case in football, I'd be feeling really good that Tennessee was going to win the national championship. That's just not how baseball works. You can lose to anybody. Anybody can get
hot. Different game.
At the right time, but there just hasn't been anyone that's had the consistency that's been anywhere near Tennessee's all season.
Bob, what do you think? Does Tennessee come out of the weekend?
Oh, yeah.
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 3 games? 2 games?
I think 2.
Okay.
Honestly.
2.
think we might be giving Notre Dame a little too much love, but that's just me.
All right.
You know, if that happens, you got the afternoon game on Saturday. You're leading into Saturday night. Knoxville will be it should be pretty electric. This place is going to be jumping if that happens. And the watch party is back, but in a different location, right?
It is back in a different location.
Kind of near right field.
Yes.
Behind right field.
Yes. This was a disaster trying to describe this over in word form for our story for it. But
behind right field.
Those coaches.
There's three words.
Behind right field implies that it's over there where the gravel lot is. It's not. It's behind right field and two to right, kind of catty corner from like where the right field right field foul pole would be, right by the. The Pong House is what my friends in the Greek life told me. I had to call upon them. I had to call upon them to tell me which house it was, and then they told me Pong, and I had to call upon them. I go, all right, formal turns. I don't know what Pong is. You're gonna have to spell it out for me. And I were at Phi Kappa something. I already forgot. But over there by the fraternity houses in a grass lot as opposed to. On Pat Head Summit Street where it was last year.
Hey, there you go. You learn something new every day. If you didn't know before, now you know the informal lingo for the fraternity houses that are located right next to Lindsey Nelson Stadium. How about that?
Yeah.
If you didn't learn anything else in the podcast today, you learned that.
There you go.
Pretty good. We are going to wrap things up and close things down here for another Wednesday recording of the show. Again, Tennessee will play at Friday at 6 o'clock, Saturday at 2 o'clock, and we will have you there for it all. You can follow Ryan online at rshump00. You can follow me at Rick_Butler. But of course, number one, first and foremost, make sure you are following at Rocky Top Insider for all of the latest Tennessee news and coverage. Also, be sure you are following the account on all different social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can find RTI on all of those places. And make sure you're subscribing to the RTI Press Pass podcast. There you go. Hey.
It's a mouthful.
It is. We'll see you back next week.